Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Friday, February 7th. I'm Ray Graff. Well, I'll be darned. The fun drive ended so quickly, you caught me off guard. I didn't think we'd need a Food Friday today, but we do. And by the way, thank you for everything you did. You were remarkable. Who are you going to call when you have to throw together a last-minute edition of Food Friday? Why, John Fisher, of course. John is a retired professor from the Culinary Institute of America in Hyde Park. He's a favorite on this show. We'll talk about the history of cocktails a little bit, shoot the breeze, maybe have a sip. 800-348-2551 is the number if you want to call in and ask a question about mixed drinks or whiskey or sake or anything. 800-348-2551. John Fisher, right after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We welcome back John Fisher today. John is a recently retired professor of hospitality and service management at the Culinary Institute of America in Hyde Park. Previously, he was general manager at the Morel Wine Bar and Cafe in New York. One year on this show, he made Singapore Slings. He hasn't done Harvey Wallbangers yet, but we'll probably talk a little about the history of mixed drinks today and taste a few. He's, of course, ready to answer your mixology questions or brewing or whiskey or sake, whatever. The number here, or sake, he tells me how to say it properly, and I never do because I'm the ugly American. 800-348-2551. Ouch. 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. He's on mic three, Zach. Don't worry. I think we'll do the show with his mic off. It'll be better still. So, John Fisher, thank you. By the way, the email address here is voxpop@wamc.org. How you doing, brother?
Pretty darn well.
You know, I can't believe the outpouring from our listeners that ended this drive yesterday about noonish. And I'm scrambling. Thank heavens for John Fisher is what I said. Although I don't know if I'll say that by the end of the show, but by the beginning of the show. By the way, speaking of Fun Drive, we'd like to extend a heartfelt thanks to the Healthy Cafe Catering Company for their incredible generosity. When we originally planned the Fun Drive, they stepped up to provide delicious meals. And then we wrapped up the Fun Drive, but forgot to tell them that we were done.
Yeah, there's a bunch of sandwiches out there.
Yeah, they sent lunch over, and I had a ham and cheese the size of a dryer. I mean, it was great. For 18 years, the Healthy Cafe Catering Company has been delighting clients throughout the Capital District with fresh, healthy food, unmatched service, led by owner Betsy Manware and her dedicated team. They become a go-to for catering in Albany, Schenectady, Troy, Clifton Park, Saratoga, and, of course, this radio station. Their commitment to create, innovate, inspire truly shines through in everything they do. By the way, John,
yes.
Create, innovate, inspire is also my slogan. Did you know that?
And you just came up with that today.
I just thought of it. Yes. It's amazing. Anyway, great to have you here.
Great to be had.
And the number, once again, if you want to trade wisecracks with John Fisher, who looks very relaxed now that he's retired, 800-348-2551, or you can email voxpop@wamc.org.
I did actually shower and shave today.
You did?
Yeah.
So really, usually you just sit on the couch watching the replay of the Knicks game from the night before.
In a pink fuzzy bathrobe, yeah.
That's exactly what I plan to do as soon as the show is over, by the way. So that's it for me. I'm waiting for the snow, which will be coming tomorrow night.
There's more coming?
It's going to be brutal. I don't know how it's going to be down in Hyde Parkway, but I mean, we're getting 7, 9, 10 inches.
Natalie cut short a ski trip because of the dire warnings of snow.
Yep.
And yesterday morning, she looked out. She said, "That's it."
Yeah.
We didn't get a lot in Hyde Park.
She a downhiller?
Yeah.
She could ski off the roof.
Well, she was born in Germany, so it's in her DNA.
Ah. Yeah. Okie doke. Well, that's interesting. Does she swear at you in German?
No, but her mother does.
Really? Oh, that's good. John Fisher's our guest today. The number is 800-348-2551. Cocktails today. Why not? The Fun Drive's over. And, I was thinking, as I was sort of thinking about what we'd talk about today, I got thinking about the origins of the mixed drink or the cocktail. How far back in time do they go? Did Cro-Magnons mix up some deer blood and some fermented berries or anything?
Well, they didn't have spoons yet, so they only shook cocktails, so their martinis weren't very good. But
you got to meet our new CEO. because we talked about.
I know she's a Brit,
and we talked about martinis, and we talked about dry London style martinis, and I disabused her of the notion about shaking them, and I said John Fisher would not be happy. Now she's not here right now, but she was surprised about don't shake a martini. Why don't you shake a martini?
A couple of reasons. The most important probably is that when you shake a cocktail instead of stirring it, you get much more dilution. And one of the most important textural elements of a martini is the feeling of viscosity. Like when you pour, you have your bottle of gin or vodka in the freezer during the summer. When you pour it out to make your vodka tonic or gin and tonic, it's syrupy when it comes out because the glycol in the booze gets colder with gets thicker with when it gets colder.
So when you make a gin and tonic, you take booze out of the freezer?
I don't bother. I mean, I just use a lot of ice.
Yeah.
And it takes up room for stuff that can be that needs to be in the freezer.
Mm-hmm.
But that the feeling of a martini that's ice cold, it feels almost velvety leaden on your palate. And the other thing is that when you shake it, it aerates it and it looks cloudy. Like when you open the faucet in some restaurants or some people's homes and they fill a glass with water and it's all cloudy.
Yeah.
And it doesn't look right and people wait for the bubbles to settle and mm-hmm. stuff because, you know, historically and in our lizard brains, we think of cloudy beverages as being bad for us because
right.
cloudy means bacteria. So part of your lizard brain is saying, don't drink that, don't drink that. That's what your lizard brain sounds like
really?
When it talks. Yeah,
I have a lizard brain.
You have a. Well,
Wait. Think. Take a deep breath. 800-348-2551 is the number. John Fisher's our guest for the next 3 minutes. 800-323-9. Nope, that's the fund drive. John. I knew I'd do it. I'd give the fund drive number. Nobody call the fund drive number. 800-348-2551 is the number for the show.
Well, they could. They could call and still give money.
You can always go online and give money.
Yeah.
So
before
anyway.
We're talking about more cocktails.
Lizard brains first.
I have a present for you.
What?
Well, you and I can't remember who else during pitching were talking pretty incessantly about hot dogs.
For
all week.
Samantha Simmons.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, these are hot dogs that I've told you about before.
It's a shame Samantha's not here because I'm taking these.
I've told you that Northwind Farms in Tivoli, those are the best hot dogs I've ever had.
You're kidding me.
And I'm not kidding you. And for once I'm being serious, the beef ones are more of a like kosher style, like a Nathan's or a Sabrette, a little bit more garlicky.
Yeah.
And then the pork and beef mixed ones are smokier.
Yeah.
And they're very... juicy.
Delicious.
So you can actually grill them.
Yeah.
And I was going to say, you know, since there are other people who want hot dogs, you can swap wieners with somebody else.
Okay. Thanks a lot. John Fisher, 800-348-2551. Actually, I think Samantha is here, but as is usually the case, no one is listening to this program. So she's not heard it, and I'll sneak them out. 800-348-2551 if you want to talk cocktails with John Fisher. So what was that first cocktail? Did we ever figure it out?
So it's... Obviously, like, you know, the two books that I brought books from David Wondrich, who's arguably the best cocktail and spirits writer in the country.
Mm-hmm.
He's the cocktail writer for Esquire magazine. He's part of the BAR, the Beverage Alcohol Resource, the most competent cocktail specialists in the world. They now do their 5-day training, which is the best cocktail training in the world.
Yeah.
And it's a 5-day seminar that costs about $4,000, and the culinary has become their new permanent home.
Oh, cool.
So for the last 2-3 years, and it's going to be this year in May again, it's probably booked already. But Dave Wondrich is their historian. They call him the historical oracle. And his book Imbibe is about the beginnings of mixology and bartending. Highly recommended. It talks a lot about... the first professional bartenders. And then I also have the Oxford Companion to Spirits and Cocktails, and Dave was the editor of it.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you said we were going to do a show about cocktail history,
yeah.
It's like, well, my brain is somewhat addled at this point.
Yeah, well,
so
you're retired now.
I brought a reference that has pretty much every answer that we'll need if I don't know it myself.
All right, so maybe I should take an underwriting break and then you maybe look up the answer to the question that I asked you?
This one I got.
Okay, what?
So it's probably punch. Punch was probably the first
gin
cocktail.
Gin punch?
Well, all kinds of punch. Brandy punch, single malt whiskey punch. Punch is made with tea, so you get a little caffeine and a little booze at the same time. And punch is kind of the ur cocktail. It's the original cocktail. It was first popularized during the Raj when a lot of young English men who didn't necessarily have rich families, the way to adventure and make money was to go to India. And in India, they had arak, which is a spirit made from basically anything that'll ferment. So it could be palm sap. It could be sticky rice that was left in the sun and banana leaves. And
that sounds delicious.
Would rot, and the stuff that was dripping out of it would ferment, and they would distill that and turn it into booze. And it's a pretty strong flavored spirit.
That sounds disgusting,
that,
man.
Which, well, it's safe. It's distilled. They boiled it.
Fair enough.
But that stuff, limes and sugar and water mixed together, and any other combination that's essentially the basic recipe for a cocktail, which is one part sour, one part sweet, and two parts booze.
Oh.
It started by the bowl full.
Yeah.
And people would sit around that bowl of punch all night long and just sit and sip it. So it had to be
Phone or yours?
This is from Felchum's. I hear something.
I think it might be you. Yeah? Okay. No, do you have a phone on, or is it your watch? Or,
no.
Interesting. Well, I'll tell you what. Let's figure out these technical issues, and then we'll take a break, and then we'll hit the phones. While you're on the topic of punch, Tom and Gardner has a question about punch, and we will go to that one after this. 800-348-2551. John Fisher is here. It's a surprise edition of Food Friday. Thanks for all you did during the fun drive. We'll be back. Yeah, when you think about cocktails, you think about John Fisher. He's very hip. You think about Shaft, right? And that's the theme from Shaft, Bernard, Pretty Birdie, and Vox Pop, 800-348-2551.
I actually used to play the theme song from Shaft in a steel drum band I played in for a little while.
Well, of course you did. You played steel drums, right?
Yeah, down at the Grand Wyndham School in Yonkers, New York. There was a one of those programs where high schools... It did an interchange program. So Hastings High School did an exchange with the Graham Wyndham School, and they had a steel drum band. And so a bunch of us learned how to play steel drums. I was on like the tenor drums, I think, not the bass ones.
Yeah, of course.
And our teacher, I'll try to remember his name. It was 50
years
ago.
Oh, no, don't bother. But, Mr. Smith, let's just call him that and move on.
One of the songs we played was the theme song from Shaft.
Nice.
Doo-doo-doo, doo-doo-doo.
Much as we just heard the theme from Shaft. Well, you know, Lucas Willard did a great award-winning story on a high school band.
I liked that story.
Yeah, wasn't it great?
Yeah.
All right, listen, enough about steel drums.
Okay,
right?
So punch.
All right, punch. Very quickly, talk about punch, and then we'll go to Tom and Gardner. 800-348-2551.
So punch did make it around. It was very popular in India with young British people. Alcoholism was rife. It was also pretty hot. They weren't used to the environment, and so they needed something as cold and refreshing as possible.
Yeah.
Then punch started making it into the coffee and tea houses of England because, hey, you have too much caffeine, you need something to stop the whips and jingles, have a little alcohol.
Yeah.
You know, calm things down. And so it became popular in England. It also was in the colonies to a certain degree. And eventually, the Industrial Revolution came along, society changed, people did not have all evening to sit in a bar with their friends.
Everyone.
Well, not the now emerging middle class.
Right.
And they wanted something, they wanted to be able to have a quick drink and get back to work, basically.
Yeah.
And so that consumption of alcohol mixed with something. Oh, that's the other thing, to make it palatable, because
whiskey,
the quality of spirits weren't necessarily as great. You know, stills were like wood-fired. And you know that fires made from logs have hot spots and cool spots.
Yeah.
And so the hot spot would burn and carbonize the sugar in the base ferment product and would make it acrid. So spirits, I mean, we're in the golden age of spirits right now. Things that we drink now, even that we think of as rot gut, would have been stellar.
Right.
200-300 years
ago. So the bottom shelf today would have been really, really good stuff.
So that stuff was to make it palatable. And you could make it palatable either by mixing it with something. You can make it palatable by aging it in wood, which is what happened with cognac at first. You know, they only aged cognac 2-3 years at first. You could mix it. You could age it in wood. I can't remember the third one right now. But you could make it more palatable. I made up the word palatabilitation.
Palatabilitation?
Thank you. And it was from that step into becoming cocktails when people started having less time to hang out together.
Yeah.
And so cocktails really happened for the most part in the States because we were, you know, forget the Luddites, you know, burning up.
Forget the Luddites was actually my second album title, by the way, the second one.
And so the Industrial Revolution in the United States, people, and there were nicknames for cocktails. People were drinking all day long because anything that was booze was safer than the water.
Yeah. Yep. I've heard that about beer, too, here in Holland and the Dutch who were here in Albany. You didn't necessarily want all the water. You wanted to have some light beer. What did they call that?
Small beer?
Small beer, things like that. All right, let's tell you what. Let's take this question from Tom about punch, and then maybe you mix something up, yeah?
Yes, I will.
800-348-2551 is the number. Tom's in Gardner, New York. Tom, go ahead.
Hey, Tom.
Hello, gentlemen. I've been reading my way through Dickens, and they often, when they're having a drink in an inn, it's just either gin or brandy, and they add sugar. And I've been thinking, oh, that must be like the first cocktail, and that must be why they call it an old-fashioned.
You're very,
is that
very close.
The first cocktail, and was that like just a regional thing, or was that more widespread?
Well, it did probably happen here in the States first. What you're describing is a sling, and a sling is spirit, sugar, and water, and that's it.
Uh-huh.
Now, so that's a sling. A bittered sling is when you add bitters like Angostura bitters, and that's what an old-fashioned is. An old-fashioned, a real old-fashioned does not have the muddled orange slice and cherry.
Did you put rock salt in it? I mean, rock candy?
Rock candy, sugar, granulated, and it's just water, sugar, booze, and a couple of dashes of Ango bitters.
Huh.
And the cool kids call it Ango.
Ango? Is that what they call it down at the CIA?
The cool kids. Well, the cool kids told me.
Ah.
That's what
You know, the kids today,
but
they're grilling.
But the old-fashioned, you know, if somebody went and they want, and that was the first libation that was termed a cocktail. In fact, the first time that the word cocktail appeared in print was in a newspaper in Hudson, New York. And the first time it was described was as a bittered sling. And so that was booze, water, sugar,
and Tom is very close. Very close, Tom.
Look at that.
Yeah, good for you, man.
Thank you.
Have a great weekend. Thanks for the call. 800-348-2551. All right, what are you going to mix?
Oh, okay.
Oh, well, did I catch you off guard?
Only a little bit, always.
Because I did mention it.
So the first drink I'm going to make.
Oh, look at that. Nice bottle.
Is arguably the most popular cocktail in Japan.
Can I see this? Japanese whiskey? What is this?
Yeah, this is Toki, which is a Suntory whiskey.
I've heard so much about the Japanese whiskeys, and I've never had it.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. And I didn't bring some of their other ones, which are just magnificent whiskeys.
Yep.
Starting in the early-ish 1900s, distilleries started being built in Japan. And I think Masataka Taketsuru was the first famous distiller. He actually came from a family of sake brewers.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't have to say sake.
I will.
Sake. It's sake.
Like I'm going to get
you
sake.
Like Very close.
Okay.
Yes.
Fair enough.
So anyway, he came from a sake brewing family, but he went to study in Scotland. And at one point he was rooming. He rented a room from a Scottish doctor. Interestingly enough, ended up marrying his daughter. They moved back to Japan after he had learned distilling in Scotland.
Huh.
And he started making whiskeys in Japan. And I can't remember the name of the gentleman.
How long ago was this?
1920s.
Okay, so there is a tradition of over 100 years in Japan of distilling.
Oh,
like
yeah.
This,
yeah.
The Western style.
But what had started happening, though, is he was making it in the Scottish style, and it did not please Japanese palates. Because Japanese flavors are pretty subtle. I mean, they do have some fermented sauces that can get a little funky. But for the most part, Japanese cuisine is pretty subtle. And these malty scotches were like, whoa, this is way outside of our comfort zone. So Suntory, this is the beginning of Suntory. And there's a possibility that the president of Suntory America is listening to us
really?
Now.
Shout out.
TJ Kumakura might be listening because I told him that I was going to be on making a Toki highball for
All right, so he better listen then.
I don't know.
Come on, TJ.
He's pretty important.
Okay.
Anyway, they started making the more Japanese-style whiskeys. And I think Hakushu is spelled Hakushu.
Mm-hmm.
Hakushu was the first distillery, I believe. And it was at one point, I think it was the largest whiskey distillery in the world. Then Yamazaki started being made. Hibiki is arguably their, even though it's not a single malt, it's a blend from a number of their different single malts. To them, it's their premier product because it's the most balanced. And these whiskeys are just beautiful.
Yeah.
They're floral. They've got sort of incense aromas. They don't beat you over the head with peat. And they're lovely. They're also really hard to get now. And they're pretty darn expensive.
Okay.
It's not why I didn't bring it.
So what are you actually going to mix?
So I'm going to make a Toki highball for you.
Oh, I love it. Now, can you take a call from Joan in Schenectady while you're doing that?
Sure.
All right, so here we go. 800-348-2551. Because we didn't see Joan enough during the fun drive, let's go to Joan on the phone. Hello, Joan. How are you?
Hello, my friend Ray. I am well.
What's happening?
I had to listen to the radio all day today because I, too, was missing our regular programming.
And here we are. We're all back, and now you're on, and now I feel everything's right with the world.
I know. And your timing, as usual, Ray, is just fantastic. My question was, give me something new and interesting in a whiskey cocktail, and I believe that Mr. Fisher is working on it right now, from the sounds of the program.
Yes, he is. So you're working on something very nice. I see you got some Fever Tree Club Soda there.
Yes, because club soda is not seltzer. It's got salt in it.
Yes. I like it better.
Yes.
Yes, of course.
And so the idea of the Toki Highball is that it's supposed to be, everything is supposed to be as cold as possible. Notice that I had the whiskey
Absolutely.
In the ice chest.
Yep.
Soda is cold. The plastic cups are not cold, but the club soda is cold, the ice is cold, the whiskey is cold, and actually they have this, I want to see one. I saw one. I didn't see it in action at their headquarters in Manhattan.
Yeah.
But they've built a tap system that premixes the cocktail with sparkling water that they say is 5 times more carbonated than normal seltzer.
Mercy.
And it's ice cold.
Okay.
And they did it. They've done it. Apparently, there are 75 of these taps around restaurants in the country. I asked them to give me one for my house when I retired. I haven't gotten it yet.
Oh, rats.
But the idea is that this is a very simple but also very refreshing cocktail.
All right, now what you just did, you took a little of the lemon peel. I don't even know what that device you used was.
Well, it's just a peeler.
Okay, and so you put just a little, you squeezed the lemon peel and just kind of twisted it, and then you dropped it in the drink.
Which is why it's called a twist.
Oh, okay. Well, listen, I don't do the twist. I take olives in most of my drinks, including bourbon, which is
not that
good.
What people don't realize is that there's a lot of oil
in
a lemon peel.
Yeah.
I don't know what's going on over
Zach
there.
Is scowling at me. It's... No.
Well, you're used to it.
Yeah, boy.
So there's a lot of oil in the lemon peel, which is where a lot of the flavor actually comes from.
Right.
And so that is This is, and just stir gently to maintain.
Okay. Do you? I see you using your finger there on yours.
Yes, nature's.
Thank you for not using it on mine.
Nature's swizzle stick.
It's flavor. It's for flavor, right?
Joan, while we have you here, a salute to you and all the people who made pledges during this fun drive. I raise my glass to you, and thank you for all you have done. You made a fast, fun drive for everybody. All right, John.
John, kanpai.
Here we go. Kanpai. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's very light. Oh, it's
good,
nice.
Night.
It's flavorful, but not over the top. So this is a very, very refined drink. Nicely done.
Simple as can be.
Great whiskey. Mercy.
Very, very popular in Japan. Becoming more popular here. Suntory is, I don't know if they still are, but when they bought Jim Beam in 2014. Okay. At that point, Jim Beam owned Maker's Mark. So, I mean, it might disturb some listeners, but the fact that Jim Beam and Maker's Mark are owned by a Japanese company, I just want to say get used to it, because Budweiser is owned by a Belgian company.
Yeah, Belgian.
And Miller Coors is owned by a South American company. So.
All right.
But
yeah,
anyway,
but
so they're
together.
They're very successful. Their whiskeys are beautiful. They have, you know, a full line. They have vodka, they have gin, they have, you know, a tequila brand.
That's a great drink, though. That's very nice. Could be good on a summer day or a winter day.
Yeah.
Perfect. Mm-hmm. Hey, Joan, we're going to let you go, but thank you for everything you did for us.
You're welcome.
Have a great weekend.
Thank you, 800-348-2551
is our number. John Fisher's our guest. It's Cocktails Today. And this email came in while I'm sipping here. Paul writes in, I'll be tending bar at the German-American Club of Albany next Friday. And thought,
ausgezeichnet.
Same to you. Gesundheit. Paul thought a Valentine's Day-themed cocktail would be fun. Maybe some chocolate cherry-based. Any suggestions? I got it, Paul. Paul in Malta. You take your Jägermeister and you take a shot of it. And then you...
kiss your wife.
Is that what you're supposed to do?
I just made it up.
No, I don't know.
Sounds good to me.
Well, that sounds like a Valentine's treat.
Yeah.
I'm not a big fan of those Jägermeister things myself. Do you have something better in mind, John?
Well, I like Jägermeister a lot when it's used the way it's supposed to be used, which is as a digestif.
Aha.
Jägermeister has an interesting history. Sidney Frank is the gentleman who created Grey Goose vodka,
mm-hmm.
and made a lot of money with it. But his first win was Jägermeister and importing it into the country. And he popularized it by bringing it to the gay clubs in New York and turning it into a shot. I'm not making this up.
What the heck?
Why? And so Jägermeister became a shot in the gay dance clubs in New York City, in Manhattan, years ago.
That's very, that's a weird story. Is that in the book?
No,
so
I can't remember where I did make it up.
But Jägermeister is something that there's a long line of German sort of herby, and also in other countries in Europe as well. They're
very
herbed. I don't know how to describe it, but they're...
Well, Angostura bitters were created by a German doctor for the Bolivian army.
What?
Believe it or not, as a digestif. I didn't make that up either. But
Angostura. Is this a Boys from Brazil thing we got going on here now?
It might have been. You know, there were a lot of Germans in Brazil.
Huh, interesting.
But anyway, so Jägermeister is supposed to be sipped as a digestif. In fact, when I lived on the Upper East Side, Manhattan, there was a bar owned by this 70, 80-year-old German woman, because this was Yorkville, you know, the German neighborhood in, on the Upper East Side. And it was called Elsie Rennie's Okie Dokie Bar.
Okay.
And Elsie would have to buzz you in, because she'd have to see your face before she let you in. And all she sold was Bud Nips and Jägermeister. And everything was related to $1.50. So I think those are the only two buttons that worked on her cash register.
Ah, of course.
So a Bud Nip was $1.50, and a shot of Jäger was $3. And if you went and you got a shot and a beer, and you said you went to shoot the Jägermeister, she would get mad at you. She said, no, zip it, zip.
Zip
I was
it.
Like, okay, I won't talk. She said, no, zip. Zip, like slowly taste.
John, this is one weird show we got going on here. 800-348-2551. Zach, let's take a break. We'll check the email bag in a bit. Some questions about tequila coming up. Do you know anything about tequila?
A little bit.
All right, here we go. Wow, I didn't know they recorded my subconscious. But there you are. That's Fear of Pop, 800-348-2551. It's Vox Pop, a very unexpected edition of Food Friday. I really thought our fun drive would go through the entire week. And everybody who pitched in, my gosh, you did phenomenally well. So I'm giving you this gift because we ended early and John Fisher, he was available. So here we are. And what are you making now?
Well, Natalie was on a great trip this fall, and on that trip, they discovered, she and her best friend discovered, barrel-aged Negronis.
Mm.
So this was a command performance. She said, I want barrel-aged Negronis.
Now, for those who don't know, tell everybody what a Negroni is.
So Negroni is the favorite cocktail of many bartenders, including me.
Okay, really?
And, well, there are a number of reasons. It tastes great, but also it's stupid simple.
Yeah.
It's 1 ounce each of gin, Campari, and sweet vermouth. Now, she had these barrel-aged Negronis on a trip to Africa and came back home and said, we want them. I want you to make them. So I bought a barrel, put in one liter bottle of each, and let it sit for a week or two. This is now, this is the second batch that I made. And Natalie was a little upset when I told her I was bringing Negronis to you at the show.
So she said, wants it all for herself.
She said, you're taking my Negronis.
Well, why didn't you bring her?
Station.
We could have had some cocktails.
That's true.
I've never met her yet.
But there's plenty at home.
Okay.
Anyway, so
how long do you age this?
What's that?
How long do you age it?
Well, when it was a new barrel, it only needed about 2 weeks. The second batch took about 3 weeks.
Here's to you.
And there's a third batch in the barrel right now.
All right, let's try it.
It's a 5-liter barrel.
Very nice. I'm not sure. Would I be able to tell the difference? And I've had Negronis between a regular Negroni and a barrel-aged Negroni.
If we had them side by each, you would.
Yeah. I mean, this is a beautiful red, but that's just...
It's mellowed out a little bit. It takes a little bit of the edge off of the gin, takes a little bit of the heat off. And it's been very popular in bars for like the last... in the city for like the last 10 years. It is arguably, I'm guessing, the most popular barrel-aged cocktail in most professional bars.
All right, let's quote Ed in Crown Point. Ed, you're on with John Fisher.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Howdy.
Hello.
I have a question. Place to get good long-stem cherries. There's a normal cherry. Then when you go to a nice bar, they give you a cherry that's big around, has a perfect stem on it. Where's the access for that, please?
Well,
we can't really tell you specific places to get it, but why don't you give us some general ideas?
No, but see, the thing is that the cherry you described as the better one, it technically is not a better cherry for a cocktail, quality-wise. The best cherries, garnish cherries for cocktails, are from a company called Luxardo.
I love those.
L-U-X-A-R-D-O. There's a really good company called Bada Bing Cherries, and those are what we use at the culinary, or used since I retired.
Yeah.
But the Bada Bing Cherries are good, but Luxardo are the ne plus ultra.
I had Maker's Mark cherries once that were pretty good.
They, they got them from somewhere,
yeah,
and they relabeled them. But were they as small as Luxardo cherries, or were they bigger?
It's a little hazy. I'm not sure. Ed, thanks a lot for the call. 800-348-2551. John Fisher's our guest today. And let's grab a couple more emails here. This is from... All right, this is a tequila question from Chris. Can you please talk in Chatham? Can you please talk about whether or not it really matters to use a tequila with no additives, G4, Ocho, et cetera, in mixed drinks or just when you drink it straight?
Honestly, I think it's... more about the actual quality of the spirit than what so-called additives are used. And I know if you remember from math class in high school, you know, the absolute quantities, the brackets instead of the curved parentheses.
No, I don't.
The absolute quality of what's in the glass is more important than the ingredients. Now, I will say that industrial-level tequila now, a lot of them are being made in a modern method where the sugars are chemically stripped from the agave, and that stuff is pretty one-dimensional. Traditionally made tequila, like Fortaleza, which is the original Sauza family. Sauza got bought by a big company, and the Sauza family went, and one of them started a tequila called Fortaleza.
Yeah, and it's very expensive.
It's expensive because it's made the traditional way with baking the agave heads and crushing them with a tostone, with the stone, and then naturally fermenting it for a couple of days. And that process gives you layers of flavor as opposed to something just that's like one-dimensional.
You can tell the difference. You can. John Fisher can.
You could tell the difference.
Why do you say it that way?
I didn't say even you.
Even you could tell. Bob V. in Gilderland writes, I was recently gifted a bottle of ice wine with ginseng root in it. Never heard of it before. What can you tell me about it? How do I store it? What temperature do I serve it at? What do I serve it with? What do I do with the ginseng root before or after drinking the wine?
The ginseng root is in it already?
Yeah, that's what he says.
I've never heard of a German person doing that. It might be from Canada, where they're...
Well, why would he be German, necessarily?
Because Eiswein originally comes from Germany.
Oh, okay. Well, they make it over in the Finger Lakes, too, you know?
Yeah, and the Niagara Escarpment.
Right you are.
But ginseng in an Eiswein, I have never heard of it before. I wouldn't see any reason to mess with an Eiswein by putting ginseng in it. But as to technically what to do, serve it chilled but not ice cold. And the best pairing for an ice wine is to pair it with a loved one.
Oh, that is so lame. Okay, there you are. Fine. You know what? Really? That's your A game? Good Lord. Okay, pair it with someone you love. There you are. Thank you for that one. Christine writes.
It's not going to get any better.
Oh, boy. If this is post-retirement John Fisher, we are in trouble. Christine writes, I apologize. I just missed the recipe for the Japanese whiskey cocktail. Could you please repeat it and give amounts and the brand of whiskey that you used? Yeah, you can do a quick version of that.
It could not be easier. It's Toki, T-O-K-I.
Which I've seen in stores.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. In fact, it's one of the only Japanese whiskeys that is readily available because the other ones are low production. So it's 2 ounces of that. It should be kept cold, either in the refrigerator or in an ice bucket. Everything needs to be cold, the glass, the ice, the whiskey, the soda.
Mm-hmm.
For a cocktail like this, I do like using club soda as opposed to seltzer because it does have flavor. It does have salt in it.
Yeah.
Fever Tree actually has sea salt, not like calcium carbonate or something.
Fever Tree makes great stuff. Their ginger beer, I love it. It's a go-to.
But it's 2 ounces of whiskey in a tall glass filled with ice. The glass should be chilled ahead of time. Put in the whiskey, then pour the club soda in down the side of the glass so it doesn't burst the bubbles, and then gently stir it once. Then put a twist of lemon over the top. Also, sometimes Suntory recommends a small slice of grapefruit.
Wow. Okay. So there you are. Now, Emily, who is a fabulous person, who is always with WAMC, always making pledges, and always corresponding with this and other shows, just a great person, said, apologies, but you never gave the German club bartender an idea for a Valentine's Day cocktail. Oh. Just a lot of interesting info about Jägermeister.
That's right. So for a – thank you for holding
Emily's the best.
Legally on that.
Okay.
Keeping me legal on this. So a cocktail for Valentine's Day. I am not crazy about most of the actual chocolate-flavored liqueurs. There's some great cherry ones. The classic cherry liqueur is Cherry Herring, which I remember like when I was like 12. My parents had it in the liquor cabinet, and I never tried it.
You were raiding the liquor cabinet at 12? That explains so much.
I could see it when they opened it. I didn't.
Oh, okay.
I did not partake. I did have my first beer taste of beer when I was 5, though, from my Flintstones class.
Okay, maybe we ought to just move on from that.
Okay, so the cocktail for German bar. I mean, there's some really good apple schnapps. I think it's called Berenson's. B-A-E-R-E-N-T-Z-E-N. I think that's it. So maybe some apple schnapps, a little bit of cherry liqueur, and ginger ale.
Okay. So you're just winging it here.
Yeah, I just made that up.
Yeah. Be sweet. It'll be pretty sweet.
Believe it or not, that apple schnapps has an acidic edge to it.
Oh, I've had it.
Yeah, it's in the, like a square, tall square
really
bottle,
good.
Clear bottle.
Love it, actually.
That stuff, I mean, the other thing would be something like an Eiswein, which is obviously the best ones are German.
Try it with the ginseng in it. Delicious.
Yeah, and then apple liqueur and a couple of chuckles.
All right, John Fisher, we'll go to the phones in a minute. What is this that you poured?
This is my retirement beer.
Oh, my gosh. What is it, brother?
This is brewed in my honor. It's called Bye Bye Brewfessor.
Ah.
And it's an American pale ale.
I love American pale ale. Hey, man. Happy retirement. I hope you still come on the show.
Oh, I will.
All right.
More than you want.
Here we go. Well, that's a fair bet. Here we go. Very delicious. Very good. Really.
Such a good beer.
I love an American-style pale ale so much.
You know, it's funny. I didn't think about it until now. But remember Newman's Ale from Albany?
Yes.
This reminds me of Newman's Ale.
Okay. So we've done beer shows and I've talked about this. But in the 80s... before there were microbrewers, I was an aficionado of Newman's Brewery, and I'd go down, and you'd either get kegs or they'd fill up these gallon beer balls, and Newman would be there, and the beer was great. And this is very similar to his pale, but the winter ale. You ever had the winter ale they made?
Winter.
Oh, God, it was the stuff of legends, just black and delicious.
I was either in Westchester or the city at that point, so I didn't get the local stuff.
Oh, so good.
But
so
Newman's
good.
Was one of my favorites.
All right, let's go to the phones here. And Rodney, you're on. Hey, I tell you, go ahead.
Hey, Ray, what's up? Hey, John Fisher, this is Rodney and Rhinebeck. How you doing, buddy?
Oh, hey, how are you?
Good, thanks. Hey, happy retirement.
Thank you, sir.
Hope you're well. And that beer you just mentioned, was that made at the culinary?
Yeah. Yeah, Hutch wanted to make something to usher me out.
He did
my
well.
Job, but
send you down the road.
Yeah, it's on. Go ahead.
No, tell me about the beer. I'm going to find it somewhere.
Oh, it's just an American pale ale. It is hopped with all New York State hops. It's all 100% New York State ingredients. So it's cool. I think it's Pilsner malt from Hudson Valley Malting. So Dennis made it, did the malt for us, and then it's all New York State hops. It's a pale amber and has a really nice both hop aroma and a nice calm level of bitterness. It's on tap at the Egg, and Hutch did a practice run. We just got a canning line, so he did a practice run from Kings.
Oh, really? Cool.
And so
I got to go down there.
Yeah, please do, because we now have 4 packs of both the Mise en Place Wit and the Cleaver IPA are both available in cans now.
All right, Rodney, we're running out of time here, buddy, but go ahead with the tequila question.
Just one quick question, John, is what is the proper vessel to serve good mezcal in from Mexico?
Well, if you're doing it... straight, which is the best way to drink good mezcal, it's called
always,
a copita.
Yeah, always straight.
Called a copita. And in Mexico, they're made out of small dried gourd shells, but there are some companies that make little clay versions to use, copitas.
Huh?
Because I had great tequila once somebody got out of Mexico, and coconut shell.
Yeah, that's one way to do it.
Right.
Coconut shell or a gourd shell. They're both called copitas.
Copitas, all right.
Yeah, Rodney, depending on the time of the night, you can use your shoe as well. It doesn't really matter with tequila. 800
heels are better, yeah.
Okay, listen, I got to tell you, this is radio, and you can't see these pictures, but Allison just made me laugh really hard. The subject heading, old bottle of bitters. Hi, an old Italian neighbor of mine gave me a box of booze that had been sitting around her house for around 20 years since her husband died. Obviously, she recognized me as a booze lover. In the box was an old bottle of bitters that had this notice on it. Notice, due to war requirements, limiting the use of quinine for anti-malarial purposes only, the quinine sulfate in ferrochina bislarry has been replaced with other vegetable bitters. My daughter looked up and thinks it may be from World War I because of the lack of quinine. I'm also sending along a picture of me testing out this bottle with the bitters. Go ahead. You can zoom that in. That, by the way, I would put on the next show, the next booze show that I do. That is hilarious. Allison, you made my day.
I hope they made her stomach feel better. I hope they made something feel better.
So vegetable bitters would keep just as well?
Hey, it's the alcohol. You know, Angostura bitters are 45% alcohol. They're 90 proof.
Yeah. Yeah, it's something.
It's a combination of preservation, but also it's how they get the important compounds out of the botanicals, because alcohol dissolves things that water doesn't.
Well, there you go. Paul writes in, and we only have a minute or so here. Love the anecdotal stories. Two things. If you talk Negroni, you got to talk Boulevardier's, my favorite rye drink. What's that? We've had those, right?
Yeah, I've made them. Boulevardier is just a Negroni with whiskey instead of gin.
Yeah.
And it doesn't really matter which whiskey you use. It can be rye, it can be bourbon, it can be Tennessee whiskey. I wouldn't make it with scotch because that would be an extra layer that's unnecessary. I
was gifted, a buddy of mine gave me a very nice bottle of Highland Park 12-year-old for Christmas.
Nice whiskey.
I'm not a huge scotch guy, and I've been sipping it just little by little. And we ran out of bourbon at one point, and I said, let me put this in a mixed drink. That mistake I won't repeat again, because that stuff is too strong and too singular for a mixed drink.
One of the only classic cocktails made with whiskey is called a Blood and Sand, which is a great name.
Yeah.
Blood and Sand.
Yeah.
And it's got cherry herring, that cherry liqueur that I mentioned
before.
Oh, there
you are. Well, it's a blended scotch, but the Rusty Nail, right? It has Drambuie and...
Drambuie and scotch, that's it.
And that's a delicious drink.
I like mine a little bit drier. I like it 2/3 scotch to 1/3 Drambuie. But it's easy as can be, as easy as this Toki highball is just the whiskey and the soda. Easy stuff to do. It doesn't have to be complicated to be good.
Mr. Fisher, I appreciate you coming on such short notice for this program. You're a good guy, and you're retired now, so I can call on you anytime I want. Thank you so much for being here, and we'll see you next. We're already booked for another show, in May?
End of March.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think so.
That's very soon.
I'm sorry.
Well, what are you going to do? Are you going to have something new?
I'll always have something new.
Support comes from Berkshire Food Co-op in downtown Great Barrington, a community-owned grocery store working to serve as a reliable source for local produce on groceries. Everyone's welcome. Berkshire.coop. Barrington Brewery, Great Barrington. Solar brewed beer, served fresh 6 days a week since 1995. Serving 9 beers on tap and 1 cask-conditioned ale. Full kitchen menu available for lunch and dinner. Closed Tuesdays, 413-528-8282. And Decumanis Green Design Build, Great Barrington, Massachusetts, providing design build services for new, efficient, energy-efficient homes and additions. Design with intelligence, build with integrity, decumanisgreen.com. Well, beautiful job, Mr. Fisher. Thanks for being with us. Thanks to everybody who pitched in during the drive. Thanks to Zach Malloy. All right, I'm going to take the weekend off. We'll see you Monday, and we'll do a Medical Monday. Have a great weekend.